I'm Heidi Harrison. I'm here with the great Vincent Falcone, great musical director, phenomenal musician, well respected by everyone. Good to see you.
Thank you.
I want to talk a little bit about your life because I know, obviously, I've known who you are forever. Mm-hmm. I know you played with my dad and you played with everybody who's anybody throughout your career. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, your childhood and how you got into music and all that.
My parents had a friend who was a piano teacher. She told them that she sensed that I had some musical ability and started teaching me to play the piano at the age of 3.
Wow.
Yeah. I can remember those wind-up piano stools.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I can remember sitting on
them. Oh, my gosh, I remember those, yeah.
And not being able to reach the pedals because I was too short, and just barely being able to see over the top of the keyboard.
That's interesting. How did the teacher sense that you had a talent for it?
I don't know.
But something told her that you had some talent. So you took to it right away, even from the age of 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so did you ever have any idea that you'd be doing it for a living?
No. Not until I got to the point where I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. And when was that?
When I was in college.
Mm-hmm. So you stuck with it all through your childhood, all through high school. Were you playing professionally anything during high school or
yes.
college or anything?
Yeah. Every chance that I could get. Yes, of course.
Yeah, what kind of gigs were you playing back then?
Oh, high school dances,
mm-hmm.
nightclubs, local nightclubs.
Yeah, good gigs and bad gigs, right? Yeah.
I was in Syracuse, New York. Uh-huh. That's where I was born and, right. and grew up.
Yeah, was it a fun music scene at that time?
Syracuse had a good school of music. Syracuse University had a good school of music, yeah.
So what kind of things were you playing at the high school dances? What kind of music? Do you remember the songs?
Oh, stuff of the day.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I was a classical pianist initially,
mm-hmm.
and then one day I heard the Stan Kenton Orchestra, and it was the harmonies and the construction was so different from what I had ever heard. I decided I had to learn what that was, and so I had a portable record player, and I would go out and get record albums of people like Bobby Timmons and Art Tatum, Oscar Peterson, and try to emulate them.
Right.
Naturally, you can't emulate that kind of greatness, but you learn. If you can learn from it, that's the important part.
Yeah, because you're expanding, obviously, your repertoire. You're expanding what's
right.
interesting to you, and then you obviously put your own spin on it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And then I went out on a road with a band that was a real dumb band, but... I went out on the road with them.
What kind of band was it?
It was a big band, but it was really, the music was bad. The leader was a schmuck.
How old were you then?
17, 18 years old.
Okay, so you like spent the summer kind of doing that, or was that after high school?
It was after high school, because I graduated high school when I was 16.
Wow. Wow, you got there pretty fast. So you went out on the road with a schmuck band leader. That's probably was a preview for upcoming attractions, right, when you got to Vegas.
Well, I went back to Syracuse and was playing in the local nightclubs. And then I was selling pianos and organs at the major retailer in Syracuse and doing very well, making a lot of money. But I knew that that's not what I wanted to do. I had 2 small children. I knew I wanted to see if I could make it as a performing. And there were only 3 places in the country where you could do that, New York, L.A., or Vegas. I didn't want to go to New York or L.A. because I didn't want my kids raised in that environment. And Las Vegas in those days was a paradise.
So now, what did your wife say at the time, the kid's mom? She was okay with this?
Oh, she was always in my corner.
That's great.
Yeah. So... I packed up and came out here on my own, rented an apartment, sent for my wife, came out here. We decided no matter what, whether I was able to get a job as a musician here or not, we were not going to go back to Rochester, New York. We were going to stay here.
What was your first paying gig in Vegas?
I was working in a gay club.
In a gay club? Where was a gay club?
On the corner of Tropicana and Paradise.
Oh, yeah. I remember. It was the Red Barn, right?
Remember that?
I sure do remember that. They had live music at the gay bar.
Yeah.
You and Bette Midler started in gay bars.
Yeah.
So what did you...
Well, I had a friend who lived in Syracuse, and we knew each other back in Syracuse and used to work gigs together, who became the drummer at the Dunes when the Dunes had the Casino de Paris.
Sure.
And he got me the job there as the pianist under the direction of Earl Green, who was the conductor in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal when I came to Vegas was to be the house pianist at Caesar's Palace. That was my goal. So I'm at the Dunes, and one day I get a call from the contractor at Caesar's Palace, Al Ramsey, telling me that they were looking for a piano player. Would I be interested? I said, that would be my dream come true. So I go over there in December of 1975, and the first act for whom I had to play was Frank Sinatra.
Wow, that's crazy. So so talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, I was just the house pianist playing his show.
Were you nervous? Tell me about the charts and how the show went and what you were thinking when you went into this.
Well, I mean, the charts were written by the greatest arrangers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Nelson Riddle, Don Costa, Billy May, and I had to read them. And a lot of them had piano solos and stuff in it.
Nice.
One of the things that... Then he started taking me on the road with him. First road gig I went with him was up in Lake Tahoe at Harrah's. And then I found out what it was like to be in a celebrity position like he was. I mean, Bill Harrah treated us like we were kings. We had a whole floor to ourselves. Bill Harrah did anything for us.
Interesting. Now, there was a story in your book about one musical director, the agent who worked with Sinatra at the time, who didn't want to talk to musicians, didn't want to shake your hand when you met him. Tell that story.
That was his manager,
mm-hmm.
Mickey Rudin. Mickey Rudin was about as ignorant of music as you could possibly be, but he was a very good agent. Although he and Sinatra, there was no love lost between them, Mickey Rudin booked him and made him a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an important thing. Why? That's what your agent's supposed to do, make you a lot of money.
So the first time I met Mr. Rudin, I put my hand out to shake hands with him. He said, I don't shake hands with musicians.
You sure it wasn't Wayne Newton?
No, Wayne and I have always gotten along well.
Oh, okay. I've heard the horror stories in the past about...
Yeah, I know. I was offered the job of musical director for Wayne. I turned it down.
Because the stories you'd heard?
Well, because I knew what was going on.
You would turn down gigs. Why? Because you heard that people didn't treat musicians right or whatever?
No, because when I would go to see what they were like, mm-hmm. they turned out to be not nice people.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, so we were talking, this is the 70s, Vegas is hopping, obviously there are orchestras in every casino. Talk a little bit about that for people who didn't live through it.
Oh, that was great. There were only about 9 major hotels in those days, and every one of them had a full orchestra with strings and everything.
Right.
And that was terrific. So I got the job at Caesars, and then, as I said, Mr. Sinatra started taking me on the road with him. And then one day we were going to go to Carnegie Hall in New York. And I get a phone call from Rudin. Said, I guess Sinatra was getting a little bit tired of the guy that was his music director, not only because he wasn't as contemporary as Sinatra wanted to be. And he knew that I was, because he'd heard me work with the other acts that were at Caesars. I get a call one day, we're going to go to Radio City Music Hall, not Carnegie Hall. He said, Mr. Sinatra wants to know if you can conduct. I said, you got to be, what did you say? So I go to New York, I go to the rehearsal, and I'm the conductor now. And I'm standing in front of musicians I have admired my whole life.
Wow. Now, had you conducted in the past, before that time?
Yeah, for other people, yeah.
Okay, but...
But, you know... This was another ball game.
Right.
And I'm in Radio City Music Hall. I'm not in, you know...
Not in the Dunes anymore.
I'm not in some theater in Pahrump. You know what I mean?
So how did that gig go?
So we walk out opening night, walk out on stage, and Leonard Bernstein is sitting right in front of me.
Oh, my gosh.
You know?
Were you nervous?
Of course. Not scared, but nervous, yes.
Yeah.
Never scared. I knew what I was doing. But nervousness is good. Just being scared is suicidal.
That's true. Now, the arrangements, as you mentioned, were done. They were done by other people. You didn't have to do the arrangements, did you?
I did some arrangements as I stayed with Mr. Sinatra over the years. But those arrangements that we're talking about are the famous ones.
Mm-hmm.
Got You Under My Skin.
Right.
my way, you know. Those were, no, those obviously I did not do. I did some later on in my experience with him. 3 nights in a row I'm conducting for him. He never said one word to me. I expected he was going to say, listen, can you do it this way instead of that way? He never said one word to me. The third night, we did something. We did a piece of music that apparently he had not been happy with what was going on with the other conductor. And apparently that night I did it the way he wanted it done. He turned around, he came back to me, and he said, this is going to be quite marvelous, my boy.
Oh, that's great. That's a great compliment coming from Sinatra.
Yeah.
Wow, you did it his way. No, there's a joke. You knew that was coming, right?
Yeah.
So you did the Radio City Music Hall, and that was how long was that? Did that gig last?
2 weeks.
Okay, and then you come back to Vegas?
Yeah, and then we went elsewhere. You know, we went all over the world. We went to Egypt. We performed on the pyramids in Cairo.
Wow, so you pretty much stayed with him then for that period. You weren't doing other gigs. You were just kind of
just
focused
with,
on him.
Yeah.
Because then he was working constantly at that
just
time, right?
Just about, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, we went to South Africa, we went to Rio de Janeiro, went to the pyramids, went all over the world.
Wow.
Went to Korea.
And he was really at the top of his game then.
Oh, absolutely. So, anyways, and he became very fatherly to me. He was a year older than my dad.
Oh, I see.
He treated Danny and my son Jeff and my wife, he treated them just great. Treated my parents wonderfully. I got to meet everybody. I got to meet all the greatest stars in the world. Gregory Peck and I used to sit next to each other every night.
Oh, you did? You
yeah.
And Gregory Peck? Now, how did you know Gregory Peck? What was your connection with him?
He and Sinatra were big friends.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah. But, I mean, I got to meet... Especially in the musical end, I got to meet musicians that I had admired my entire life.
Yeah.
You know, Al Hurt.
Sure.
Became a friend. Pete Fountain.
Yeah, some great people, because everybody wanted to work with Sinatra.
Nelson Riddle and I. Don Costa and I became very close friends. Billy May and I became very close friends. These guys were my idols.
Yeah, how amazing is that, right? To go from playing piano as a little kid to all of a sudden these people you grew up with, people you admired, now you're playing with them and you're friends with them.
My friends, right.
Right. That had to be amazing.
Incredible.
So how long did you work with Sinatra in total?
Almost 10 years.
Wow. And then now, you were still working with him full-time during that time, or are you doing other things?
No. I did other things, but only when we weren't, like if we were off for 2 or 3 weeks and something came up here, I would get a call. I could do that. But I didn't work for anybody else.
Mm-hmm. So after the Sinatra years, what were you doing then?
Well, then I went with Tony Bennett. Connie Francis and I were together. The McGuire sisters and I were together. Then I met Robert Goulet, and he and I became a team. And he became like an older brother. He was just such a great guy. We became such close friends. And I loved working with him because he was such a great entertainer.
Yeah, he was.
Great entertainer.
Yeah, and he was singing right up till the very end.
Yeah. He died a month after our last concert. He and I wrote a song together that was recorded called Pull Me Up. He was a poet, I'll tell you. And an artist. He you know, he was quite an artist as well. I worked with Red Skelton. You know, I worked with all of these great people that I admired my whole life.
Yeah, this was really the heyday of Las Vegas, you know, in the late 70s, the early 80s. I mean,
yep.
Everybody who was anybody came here to play.
That's right. Jerry Lewis and I became good friends.
Yeah.
Still are. I became his music director.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Eady. I was their music director for the last years of Eady's life.
Wow. Yeah.
And Steve and I are still good friends.
Yeah. This is Vegas royalty we're talking about here.
Yeah. Jerry, I can't even begin to tell you what a great, brilliant, wonderful, generous man he is.
Mm-hmm. And he's battled some health problems for years, poor guy.
Yeah.
Well, he's gone through a lot of stuff.
But what a genius.
Yeah. So now, when they did the telethons, were you involved in the Jerry Lewis telethons?
Yes.
Yeah, because I know my dad played a lot of those, and those were always some top-notch people, top-notch entertainers.
Yeah. Until the last years of the telethon. When Jerry no longer had the not the control, because he never lost control of anything. But he never had the, at the end, towards the end, he didn't have the kind of guest talent that he had had in earlier years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when Don Rickles would be on there, I also became Don Rickles' music director for about a year and a half before I went with Bob Anderson when we did the show at the Palazzo called Frank the Man and the Music.
Yeah.
Which was a great show.
Yeah. Bob Anderson, very, very talented guy.
Extremely talented.
And that had to be fun for you, because here you are, you work with Frank Sinatra yourself, and now you're helping Bob Anderson with this amazing show that got rave reviews.
Yeah. I even had my son in the trumpet section.
Well, I can understand that, because your son's
whenever he could make it, but he was so busy with other people that I almost never could get him.
Yeah, I know. He thinks he's a big shot. I've known him since he was like 4. Because he used to come to our house, and my dad used to make him mouthpieces. Now he's like a big shot playing with Celine, and people are like, he's too good for all of us.
Mm.
But he's a fantastic trumpet player. You've got to be incredibly proud of Danny and what he's done. Because now, how old was Danny when he started playing trumpet?
10, I think. There was a show here in town called Pepper's Little People.
Okay.
And he featured young people, and Danny he kind of took a shine to Danny, and Danny was on his show many times.
Oh, that's so great.
My other son's a hell of a drummer.
I did not know that.
He's great.
And he plays here in town?
No. He lives in L.A.
Oh, wow.
I remember one time when I was doing Tony Bennett, I went to the rehearsal. Joe LaBarbera, my very close friend, was Tony's drummer in those days. And Joe's daughter was here visiting him, and she was not feeling well. So Joe came to me and said, listen, ask your son if he'll play the rehearsal for me, because I got to go take care of my daughter. So I did. So Jeff sits at the drums. Tony comes in. I didn't say anything because I didn't want to say, hey, Tony, this is my son, because I didn't want Tony to say anything nice unless he meant it.
Right.
So we did the rehearsal, and Tony comes up to me and says, who's the drummer? He's a good player. I said, it's my son. Then I told him, you know.
That's great. Now, does he play a lot of studio work? What does he do in L.A.?
Well, he's in a business. He does not make his living in music,
mm-hmm.
but he's still one of the better players.
Yeah.
And he does a lot of side playing.
He used to sub for Louie Belson in L.A.
Oh, wow. That's great.
And he was almost going to go on tour with Lenny Kravitz, the first tour.
Wow.
Until Lenny decided he wanted Cindy Blackmon, the big...
Oh, right. Right.
The whole thing.
Right, the look, right, the stage look.
But my brother was being considered.
Interesting. You know, that's great. That's fun. That's a great. It's nice because she's very tolerant of you as a father to listen to one learning to play drums and one learning to play trumpet in the same house. It's got to be loads of fun when they're trying to learn, right?
Yep.
That's so funny. So now, after the Sinatra years, you play with pretty much everybody who's anybody. And lately, you've been playing with Pia Zadora a lot. And of course, she's a darling lady.
She is indeed. I met Pia when she was about 21 years old. And I just. Sinatra liked her.
Mm-hmm.
She opened for us for a while.
I remember that she used to play at the Riviera back in the day when she was just a tiny, I don't know how old she was, but she was very, very young.
Yeah. Anyway, Tino Barzi, who was Frank Jr.'s manager for a long time and worked with Frank Sr. too, he called me one day and asked me if I'd be interested in helping develop a career for Pia, because he was her manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, sure. So we got together. And then eventually, Sam DiStefano joined us. Sam was the entertainment director for Playboy. And Tino hired him to be the entertainment director at the Riviera for several years. And we developed Pia's career. We went to London twice and recorded albums with her there, with the London Philharmonic and the Royal Philharmonic.
Wow.
Terrific.
So what does it take when you look at somebody and you see whether or not they have star quality? And I'm sure you've seen a lot of people who are mediocre, who had no chance to succeed, and people who just had that star quality. What do you look for in a singer or a musician that tells you that they're a star?
Well, no, nothing tells you that they're a star, but it's not difficult for me to tell whether a singer has the potential of being a singer who understands the material that they're singing, or simply singing the notes.
Yeah, I imagine that's true. So when you were developing Pia's career, what kind of things did you do? And I'm asking more in a general way, like, what did you do?
I knew that her only strong area was in singing the Great American Songbook, not rock and roll, you know, not any of that crap.
Yeah.
And so that's what Tina and I developed with her.
Yeah, sometimes people are singing the wrong music, right? Oh,
absolutely.
Speaking of, I understand you have quite a few opinions about the people who are singing the Great American Songbook. Now, I know that when I was about maybe 20, Linda Ronstadt came out with Oliver Nelson Riddle stuff, and that really kind of got me thinking about songs that a lot of times I hadn't heard of them before, and they were fantastic. But since then, you've got a lot of other people doing it. You've got Bublé, you've got Rod Stewart. What are your thoughts on those people?
Well, Rod Stewart, to me, couldn't sing his way out of a paper bag. Michael Bublé is, no question, he's got a good voice and all that, but he doesn't do anything for me. He doesn't move me.
Yeah, I agree with you. Ever since I've heard him, I think to myself, I can walk into any restaurant in Vegas, I can hear a guy who sounds just like him. To me, that's what I hear. I don't know, but some people like it.
I've never been a fan of Barbara Streisand, because, I mean, there's no question she's got a great vocal equipment, but she doesn't do anything for me.
Mm-hmm.
However, on the other hand, for instance, Diana Krall.
Oh, yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Fantastic.
One of the greatest singers of our time, who's a close friend of mine, and I was his musical director for quite a while, is Jack Jones.
Oh, I love Jack. Of that era, I think he's the best. I love his voice.
Yep.
I got to meet him recently, and I told him that remember his song, Wives and Lovers?
Sure.
I said, that taught me all I need to know about marriage. Keep that makeup on when your husband comes home. Don't look like a slob.
Yeah.
And he kind of laughed, but I grew up with that. And his Christmas album that came out in the early 60s, that was the song track of my Christmas.
He just did a new CD on which he recorded a song that I wrote.
Oh, great.
And it got rave reviews.
That's great.
Particularly on the song that I wrote. It's a song about Sinatra, a tribute to Sinatra.
Mm.
The lyrics were written by my deceased great drummer friend, Joe Cacuzzo, who was Rosemary Clooney's drummer for many years. He wrote this magnificent poem about Sinatra, and I put the music to it. Jack recorded it, and the reviews mention the song constantly, and there's a chance we might get a Grammy.
Wow, that would be amazing. Well, Jack Jones still sounds fantastic.
He certainly does.
Yeah.
He's one of the greatest singers of our time.
Yeah, he is. He absolutely love his voice. And it's funny because most of the people might know him from Love Boat or something like that. But the rest of us know him from something obviously far beyond that in his career that continues to this day. So tell me some of the people in Vegas who were a pain to work with. Who were those people?
Paul Anka.
He was a pain? Why was he a pain?
He just would never relax and let things happen. It was always something. There was always some kind of criticism he would have of something. I used to have a difficult time with him.
Because he was so picky about all the music, or he just couldn't relax and enjoy the moment, or what was it?
I finally quit him. Now, in the case of my son Danny, Paul has been great to Danny. He treats him like a star, which is great, because I hope it's because he knows he's my son, but I know it's because he plays so well.
Right, he plays so well. That's why he gets all the gigs. He doesn't get the gigs because he's your son. He gets the gigs because he's fantastic.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, that's true. So tell me some crazy, funny Vegas stories that kind of talk about how Vegas was back in the day. Because, you know, for those of us who grew up here, we'd get dressed up. We'd go to dinner shows. It was an entirely different thing. You had everybody piled into the showroom. Everybody was smoking.
Yep.
Talk a little bit about some of that.
Well, there was a 9 o'clock show and a midnight show. The 9 o'clock show was a dinner show.
Mm-hmm.
And all the hotels had dinner shows. And then the cocktail show at midnight. So the evening wasn't over till like 2 in the morning.
Right. And you could drive across town in 10 minutes back then. I remember that day when you could actually do that. You know, when I was a little kid, my dad would come home between shows, as they said, because he could do it.
I would too.
Yeah?
Yeah, when Eastern was the last street going east and Decatur was the last street going west.
Absolutely.
And Decatur wasn't all the way across town in those days. It was in sections.
Right.
If you'll remember.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you doing at the time, were you doing a lot of doubling and things like that? Because I know there was tons of work at that
time.
Yeah,
because Nat Brandwin, who was the music director at Caesar's Palace, took a shine to me. And I used to do when an act would come in where they wouldn't have their own conductor, and the band leader would have to be the conductor. Nat didn't want to do that, so he made me the conductor for everybody that would come in who needed one.
Wow.
Which is how Sinatra saw me conduct, because I was conducting for some acts when Sinatra was, the next night he was opening, and he was watching from the side, and he saw what I did, and I guess, and he told me he liked it, and then that's what happened. That's how that developed. All of these things were very fortunate.
Yeah.
But you had to have the ability to do it. I mean, you got to be lucky, but you also have to be prepared.
Right. Yeah. You don't just get lucky unless you have the skills to be able to do it. So how do you see music today? I mean, Las Vegas has changed so much. There are hardly any orchestras. There's not a lot of work for musicians, even the good ones. Talk a little bit about what you've seen.
I see, just as I see it all over our country, I see culture deteriorating. We don't have culture anymore. Rap is disgusting as far as I'm concerned. People like LL Cool J and what have you, that's not talent as far as I'm concerned. They have no idea what talent is.
Yeah, they don't. And it's hard to hear live music anymore. Most people aren't doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a tough thing. And what about Frank and Dean and all the Rat Pack guys?
Yeah, I got to know Dean and Sammy very well.
Yeah, and they were nice guys?
Oh, yes. Sammy was maybe the most talented man that ever lived.
Mm-hmm.
He had so many talents. Acting, dancing, singing, impressionists. He was amazing.
Yeah, he could do anything, that's for sure. Dean Martin, what was he like?
Whom? Dean?
Yeah.
Very relaxed guy. And I got to know Perry Como, too,
mm-hmm.
who was a wonderful man. I did George H.W. Bush's inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
I did Bill Clinton's. I did Ronald Reagan's. And I did the George W. Bush.
Wow. Now, were you indoors at that time, or were you doing something outdoors?
Both.
For those of that's got to be loads of fun in January with your fingers freezing.
Yeah, I used to do New Year's Eve outdoors with Tony Bennett in... What's the area in New York?
Oh, Times Square?
Yeah.
And freezing with your little fingers frozen stiff?
I mean, it's so cold you could barely touch the keys on the piano. But we did it.
Yeah, and that's what the people wanted to see. Great stories. Well, I have other stories.
Can I give you a couple of
them? Yes, please. Okay,
so there's a couple of things. First of all, he did the Monday Night Jazz at the Four Queens for 10 years. And played with this, because a lot of people don't realize what a great jazz piano player he is. Played with everybody from Freddie Hubbard to Bobby Shue, everybody and their mother came to this town, and he was featured. Basically, it was his trio. It was Bob Badgley, and who played drums?
Oh, Bob Badgley. I know that name from my childhood.
Either Santa Savino or...
Yeah. John Abraham played sometimes?
No.
Well, anyhow, he... So he's got a heck of a history as a jazz piano player. So, well, great story. There's two stories. One is he did a concert with Count Basie with Sinatra, and they had pianos nose to nose. And Count Basie was one of his idol, one of his all-time idols. He said, "Mr. Basie, this is such an honor to meet you. I've been wanting to meet you my whole life." And Basie said to him, "I heard about your ass."
Sinatra must have told him.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's the highest form of praise, isn't it?
Oh. And then we became friends. He said, "Call me Bill." He said, "My name is Bill." I said, "I can't call you Bill, Mr. Sinatra. There's no way I could call you Bill." I ended up calling him Pops. We did a lot of concerts together.
Mm-hmm.
He was just one of the greatest of all time.
That's great.
Another time I got a phone call. I was coming back from college, and I was staying at his house, and I answered the phone. He said, "This is Tony Bennett." I said, "Yeah, right, whatever." I thought it was a joke, so I thought it was maybe Bob Anderson calling. And I kind of razzed him a little. He goes, "No, honestly, it's your father. This is Tony Bennett." I said, "Oh my God, Mr. Bennett, I'm so sorry."
He probably got that a lot.
Oh, I said, "This is his son, Dan, great fan of yours, and so on and so forth. It's an honor to talk to you." And he said, "I want to tell you something. You know, your father is one of the greatest musicians I've ever played with in my life. half.
Aww.
And I said, wow, that's a real line. He said, I want to know something else. He said, I had mentioned to him, I said, you know, I studied those Bill Evans, Tony Bennett albums. There's two of those where it's just the two of them. Mm-hmm. And they're like the quintessential piano singer. I mean, there's nothing better.
Right.
And he said, you know that I have never played that music with anyone since Bill died other than your father.
Interesting. Well, that tells you all you need to know.
You know George Bugatti?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Well, George and I just did a CD. We replicated those two CDs as best we could. I mean, it's certainly, we're not Tony Bennett and Bill Evans, but we did it. And I think there's a CD here, maybe I can give one to you.
Okay. Yeah. That'd be great. I'd love to hear it.
I'll get it for you.
I would love to hear it, yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to, for you to have it. We did all the songs on both CDs that they did called Together and Together Again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, what a trip that was. By the way, my book, Frankly, Just Between Us, is available on Amazon.
I love that. Good. I was going to ask you that. People need to hear it because you've got some great stories about your life, a little about Sinatra, about Vegas, some of those other things. And that's important because, you know, Vegas has changed so much, as you mentioned, the last 10 years, 20 years.
You know who else was one of my clients? Andy Williams.
How was he? Was he a nice guy?
Terrific. I had a wonderful time conducting for him. He was a great singer.
Yeah. I loved his. He seemed like a nice guy. Oh, you know, some people seem nice, you know, their persona.
He was a lovely, lovely man.
Yeah.
Diane Carroll and I were together for quite a while, and she's a doll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's a wonderful woman.
Great singer. Great lady.
Yeah. I am really honored that you came to interview me because I've been listening to you for years.
Oh, that's sweet. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's very kind of you to think of me.
Well, I've certainly heard nothing but good things about you from everybody, so
thanks.
I wanted to get out here and talk to you a little bit. And, you know, and I hear about the kids, the grandkids, see you all on Facebook, see pictures of you on Facebook all the time. And, you know, you feel like you're following people even though you haven't seen them in a long time.
On Facebook, there is a moment that I had with Sinatra that will live in my mind forever. I wrote a song for his mother called Bossa Nova for C.
Mm-hmm.
Her name was Connie. And Sinatra liked it. So I wrote an arrangement for the orchestra for it. He used to get on the podium and conduct the orchestra and feature me as the pianist. And it's on Facebook.
You know, did you post it? Because I think I saw it.
I did.
I did see it.
One of his friends, Gary Nassif, found it.
Yeah.
And sent it to me.
Yeah.
And I posted it because it's just so amazing. I remember seeing it. I mean, I used to go every time they were here. I'd go to rehearsals, I'd go to the show. You know, I was a kid, but it was.
Right.
And I do remember him playing it one time. And it was just really cool. My mom was sitting there. It was pretty awesome.
I did see it, and it is fantastic.
Yeah.
It was really amazing. Yeah, that's great stuff. It's good to have a, you know, some kind of archives of those kind of things. There's a lot of stuff that you do isn't ever on videotape, so you don't really see it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
He was wonderful to me. I mean, he really treated me like a son in many ways.
Yeah.
I never called him Frank.
What'd you call him?
Mr. Sinatra.
Did everybody call him Mr. Sinatra?
No. Everybody called him Frank. But I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
But he was really good. He took my father, one night I took my father to the dressing room at Caesars. So the three of us are in the room talking, and he takes my father, he says, come with me. And they go in the back where the restroom was. And when they come out, my father said to me, he told me that if I ever needed anything to call him.
Isn't that funny? That's nice. That's a very nice thing. Now, is it true that he didn't read music, Sinatra?
That what?
That he didn't read music?
He did not.
Okay, so when you were going over something, you just hum it to him and he'd hum it back, or how did that work?
Well, in the album trilogy where we did the past, the present, and the future was all original material written by Gordon Jenkins. I had to teach Mr. Sinatra all of those melodies because he couldn't read them, you know.
Yeah.
So we spent hours, days, weeks, hours at his place in Palm Springs rehearsing to do that. Those three albums.
Yeah, you sing it to him, he sings it back, yeah.
I mean, that was a project. That's three full albums in one set called Trilogy.
Wow.
The past was done by Billy May. The present was done by Don Costa. The future was Gordon Jenkins.
Yeah.
He wanted Nelson Riddle to do the past. Nelson was so mad at Sinatra because of what Sinatra had done to him. When they were honoring, they did an honor of Nelson Riddle in L.A. And of course, Sinatra, without Sinatra there, But Mr. Sinatra's, that guy Mickey Rudin I told you about, he booked Sinatra on the night of the, so Sinatra didn't go to, so when Nelson found out about it, he canceled it and rescheduled it for another date later. Rudin did the same thing. Nelson never forgave Sinatra for not showing up at his. So when I was talking to Nelson on the phone and I explained everything to him, I said, will you do it? And he said to me, he said, tell him I'm busy, and he hung up.
Wow. Interesting. Well, you know what? When people feel like they got screwed over, you can't blame them for standing up for themselves.
Right. And then I got to do George Burns.
Mm-hmm. How was he? Was he nice?
Oh, that man had forgotten more about show business than most people ever knew. So I took my mother and father to the Riviera to meet him, to see the show.
George Burns?
Yeah, uh-huh. And I took them backstage to his dressing room. I asked him if I could bring them back. He said, sure. So I bring them back to the dressing room, and we're all visiting. And then it became close time to the show, so I told my parents, I said, come on, we've got to go because he's got to get ready for the show. As we're walking out, George reaches out and grabs my mother by the arm, and he says, Ann, next time you come to see me, come alone.
Can't blame a guy for trying, right? Oh, that's hilarious. I bet you saw a lot of that stuff behind the scenes, right?
A lot of what?
A lot of that stuff behind the scenes. And you, did you ever work with people like Tom Jones and Engelbert and those guys who had all the women falling?
Engelbert was the guy I was trying to think of who I was offered to be his music director, but I turned it down.
You turned down Engelbert? Why did you do that?
Because I don't like him.
Not a nice person?
I didn't think so.
I remember my parents were friends with Laurie Holloway, who at one point was his, I don't know if his musical director, whatever he was. I just remember his name from being a little kid. But you didn't like Engelbert? Not a nice guy, huh?
I didn't know. I didn't think so.
My dad told a story one time about somebody in town, I don't know who it was, who lived here in Vegas and turned down Barbra Streisand being her musical director and said she's not going anywhere. And I don't know who it is. I've never heard who it was. But it was one of the guys in town.
I've never heard that story. Yeah. So I don't know who it was either.
This is very early in her career, obviously.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, but you just never know. Who surprises you the most as far as entertainers who've actually survived and had better careers than you would have thought?
James Taylor.
Yeah?
I got to work with James Taylor. I never was a fan of his, but I am now.
Yeah. Had a great voice.
A huge talent.
So you didn't think at the time you played him, you didn't, you didn't think he was going to go anywhere?
No, but then when I got to play his music, he writes his own music. I realized that he knew what he was doing. The other guy was Charles Aznavour.
Who?
Charles Aznavour.
I don't know who that is? Mm-hmm. I don't think I know who that is.
He was the French Sinatra.
Oh, okay, yeah. He was another guy you didn't think, whatever, and he surprised you?
Charles Aznavour was the only entertainer with whom I ever worked who never sang anything except songs that he wrote, and every one of them is a masterpiece.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other people who surprised you, who weren't as good, and then they went on to have great careers? Because it's interesting sometimes. You'll see people who are marginally talented who will be wildly successful, and you're thinking, as I know a lot of singers in town who are amazing, who are not famous, and then you see people making records, you're going, really?
Oh, yeah, don't get me started on that.
For instance, there's a few guys here in town that I think should be way ahead of where they are. Clint Holmes, extremely talented guy.
Yeah, he is.
Jerry Lopez,
those talented guys are
really huge talent.
Mm-hmm.
Earl Turner?
Yeah. Earl Turner, very talented.
Oh, is he ever?
Yeah.
Very and a good friend.
Mm-hmm. Very good guy.
There'll be an edit in there, I'm hoping.
Yeah, don't. I can edit that. Earl Turner, very talented, big liberal though. He went after me on Twitter about something, and
I'll
said,
tell you.
"My friend, I don't argue with my friends about politics.
Yeah.
When I'm off the air, I'm off the air. Not my friends. I don't."
Earl, and the other guy I'm trying to think of, who I hope I will remember.
Sonny Turner. Yeah.
Earl and Sonny and Clint and I, if I ever get over this,
mm-hmm.
we're going to go to the board of education here in Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
and we want to do a tour of the schools. One white guy and three, and teach these kids. Earl and Sonny and Clint are three of the most talented and intelligent guys that I know. We want to go and teach these kids how stupid prejudice is. And what's really important in life is getting an education. And learning what you can do and then go out there and work at it and do it. Because those guys didn't become as good as they are by just hanging around. They work their tails off, and they still do. And all three of those guys are consummate performers.
Yeah, they're you're right. I mean, you could have a huge impact on the kids by explaining that.
And wonderful people.
Yeah, they are.
Sonny and I have been friends for years. Earl and I too, and Clint and I for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
Great performers.
Yeah, they really are.
We want to do something to add to the culture of Las Vegas.
Yeah. Well, you did. You guys did a lot. I mean, you guys were really doing all the legendary stuff back in the heyday of Las Vegas. I mean, you saw a part of Las Vegas that a lot of people will never see. You saw it from behind the scenes firsthand.
Yeah. A lot of people will never know what it was like.
Yeah. To be able to do what you did, for heaven's sake, all the different acts that you played and all the things that you did. This little kid who started playing piano at 3, it's pretty impressive. You would never have imagined that. Your parents must have been really proud of you.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, how much of your career did your parents get to see?
All of it.
So they were around for a lot of years?
I moved them here in 1976.
Oh, okay. So right when you're in the middle of Sinatra and everything,
so
your parents
I
were here.
I took them everywhere, you know. Mm-hmm. They got to meet all the celebrities that I knew. I made sure they got to meet them.
That's great.
I remember Mr. Sinatra introduced his mother in the audience a couple of times. Well, she just, because, you know, she was very quiet and humble.
Yeah.
Boy, that just put a smile on her face for
2 weeks.
Oh,
yeah. How exciting is that to be singled out by Sinatra?
He used to refer to my parents as Vinny's producers.
That is so great. That's a perfect title for him.
But he was so kind to them.
Mm-hmm.
And no ego, you know, just one-on-one.
Yeah, that's very nice.
I saw Sinatra do some generous things that nobody would understand. I remember one time his secretary was reading him his mail, and it was from a woman, I think in Minneapolis, who told him that all her life she had wanted to see him and had never been able to. We were going to go to Minneapolis and perform. She said, and now that you're coming to where I could come and see you, my health won't allow it. He told his secretary to send a limo to pick her up, take her to the theater.
Wow.
Paid for everything, took her home. He did things like that all the time. When Joe Louis had his stroke, when he was the host at Caesar's Palace, it was Sinatra who sent him to Dr. DeBakey. Paid for everything.
Wow. Yeah, those are the stories people don't hear about.
I was in a car with him we were going from Reno to Lake Tahoe to perform. We flew to Reno and we were going to Lake Tahoe when he got a call on the, remember those old original phones?
Yeah, the car phone or whatever. Yeah.
Where you had to have a battery pack that you carried
right
on your shoulder. The phone call came in to tell him that Joe Louis had just been afflicted with this. He called the DeBakey from there and set it all up.
Wow.
Yep. He did things like that all the time.
Those are the nice kind of things you can do when you're in that position.
People,
and you have that attitude.
And he never let it get out that he kept it all to himself.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Yeah.
Well, you certainly got to see a lot of things in Vegas, that's for sure.
Yeah, I did.
Had a heck of a career.
This town was one of the greatest places you could ever imagine.
Oh, for musicians, yeah.
Not only for musicians, for everybody. It was a beautiful place to live.
Mm-hmm.
Sales tax was 3.25%. No state income tax.
Yeah.
You could go from one end of town to the other in 10 minutes.
Why didn't my parents buy more land back then?
The people who did made out.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it was a great town. It was a great town to live in, that's for sure. And you got great kids and great grandkids and kinds of cool stuff.
I do.
That doesn't happen by accident.
As a matter of fact, it's my other grandson's birthday today. He's 10 years old today.
Oh, wow.
And this would have been my father's 101st birthday today.
No kidding.
My grandson was born on my father's birthday.
Wow. 101. Wow.
He would have been today.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Both my parents would have been now 101 years old.
Hmm. Wow. And how old did they live to be?
My father, 82. My mother, 95.
Wow. Well, that's good luck of you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Well, I don't want to wear you out. I'm so glad to have talked to you, though.
My pleasure. Believe me. As I say, thank you for even considering me. I appreciate that so much.
I wanted to hear some stories that you had, and I wasn't going to only hear about the bar over there at Piero, so I better come out here and check it out. Well, great to talk to you, and I'm looking forward to you doing that tour with Earl and Sonny and Clint. I think they'd be fantastic at the schools. Well, thank you for spending time with me.
Great pleasure of mine.
You too. Thanks.